Hi, I'm Lashana Lynch, and you are listening to the Post-Credit Scene podcast.
We are the Post-Credit Scene podcast. Woo. We're a 14HQ original. And most importantly, we are lovers of film, TV, and theatre. And we are here at the Corinthia Hotel for the Day of the Jackal, shall I say. Really, really excited to speak with our special guest. I'm firstly going to introduce my fellow hosts. Hossam, how are you feeling?
I am ridiculously excited. It's the first time we're doing something like this, and I'm really gassed. So, here we go.
You nervous?
I'm definitely nervous. Yeah. But I also hide it very, very smoothly. So it's not too bad. It's not too bad.
And a lovely Basola, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. I rushed here and I didn't put mascara on, so I had to put glasses on.
Who'd you blame?
I blame Hossam. I was the first one here, as always. I'm always so early. It's really like a struggle.
You know what we've done?
Why did you laugh straight away? That's crazy.
I'm in the crew now, I guess. I don't know.
We brought our special guest into our politics. Round of applause for the one and only Lashana Lynch. Round of applause, guys. Yes,
sir. Let's get it.
Firstly, thank you for joining us. We're really, really excited to talk to you today. We're here to talk about The Day of the Jackal, which we've got to see. Really, really good series. And I'm not just saying it for saying it's sake, because sometimes people say, oh, yeah, series is good, or the film's good, and it's, needy.
Yeah.
If I'm honest, crazy.
If I'm being honest. But I must say, I'm very, very much impressed with the series. Got to see, I think, the first three episodes. No, loved it so far, so really looking forward to that.
Yeah. Don't spoil the rest of it.
I won't.
Okay.
No, I don't do spoilers. Right, so that's good.
I think the one thing we all have in common, we're Londoners. And my research tells me you grew up in Hammersmith.
Research is incorrect. The Google is incorrect.
So Google lied to me.
Yes, it's very specific, but like, you know, the margin is close. But Shepherd's Bush specifically.
You're a West London babe.
Yeah. Where are you from?
He's a West Londoner.
What?
Yeah. It's very West. It's West Drayton, like as in very, very West. Relax, right?
Yeah, she's looking at you like,
Relax.
Look, I've had that experience. Yeah. So I moved from, when I was younger, from Shepherd's Bush to Greenford, and everyone's like, you're not West.
No, Greenford's worse. That's way worse. I'm like Hayes.
No, you're a horrible West.
That's way. That's the countryside. There's green there.
That's Heathrow, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty.
I mean,
you live by Heathrow.
Like
in the direction of.
When you say you're from West London,
but there's buses, bro. What do you mean?
Oh please, brother.
No, it is.
But I think importantly, we want to, before we get into the talking about the series, which again, as I said, I loved. We want to know a bit about the journey growing up in sort of London and Hammersmith, and how that sort of translated into
Bush.
Sorry, Shepherd's Bush. They're kind of like the same thing.
No, they're not.
Okay,
where's crazy?
Where are you from?
Surrey Keys.
Oh. South London.
Okay, if there's an area nearby and they said you're from, so would you say you're from Bermondsey?
If someone said I was from Bermondsey, I wouldn't fight them about it. Yeah. But I'd say no.
Oh, he's not proud.
You're being nice.
He's not proud.
No, because when you're from South, it's fine. As long as you stay from South.
Yeah, it's just like, way!
It's all like one road away. Literally, you step onto another road and you're in another area. Like, literally. South London's like, yeah, crazy like that.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, we want to know about the journey. Before we get into the series, talk to us about sort of your acting journey before you sort of...
Do you mean from like primary school?
Yeah, man, tell us.
Because it started there.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, I'm not like... massively, but I think a lot of us did the Christmas carols and the school plays and all those things.
What was your favourite play?
Pinocchio, because I played Pinocchio as a little black girl.
No.
And I think that is just so progressive in the 90s. And I'm very proud of myself. And I talk about it all the time. And I think that's kind of what led me to being as progressive as I am today in my career. Pinocchio and... There was one that no one knows. Someone's like Edward's Shorts or something like that. It's like about his, not Edward's Shorts. There's a young boy who has shorts that like he really likes. And I think everyone in the play has to. Yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah, I don't know what that was.
It's one of those things where as a child, you're like, wow, this is such an incredible story. And then you're like, it means nothing. I'm going to ignore it and carry on. It's not a West London thing. Let's not be offended.
It's funny. I actually played a gang member in Bugsy Malone, and I thought that was pretty not progressive. But
at the time, did you feel stereotyped?
I felt so cool. Like, I was like,
yeah, this is it. Exactly.
I didn't say a word, but I was going, pow, 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 pow.
I was in Hairspray.
Yeah.
Wow. It's a big deal.
No, I just played the instruments. I wasn't part of the actual acting.
Just played instruments.
Yes, I can't sing or dance or act.
But you played instruments.
Yeah. But just about.
They were done. They were played.
Thanks, guys. Stop here.
Did you guys study drama in school?
No. Like, as in, like, by force or by choice?
Up to you.
By force.
Because you have to up until like year 9, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then you get to choose it for GCSEs.
Yeah, no, I didn't choose it.
I remember doing really one good monologue in year 9, thinking, guys, I could really do this. But then I realised I couldn't. Yeah, it was just one good monologue, and that was it.
And another question, or something I'm really interested, were your parents like very supportive? Because I know some of us come from backgrounds where like we're expected to go down one certain route, you know, education is like such a big thing within our community. So was that something that was sort of pushed on you, or were you sort of encouraged into your sort of creative journey?
I want to say that I didn't really give my parents a choice.
Yes, yes.
Because when you see the thing and you feel the thing, and if you have like a speck of some possible talent or gift, then your parents have, you know, the reason to go with the child's choice. And mine was like, I displayed from a really young age that I love performing and telling stories, and I sang a lot and danced and went to all the like local drama classes and stuff. And like going back to your first question, outside of school plays and carols and things, there were like opportunities that came to my primary school in Shepherd's Bush.
Hammersmith.
No. They're like all these, like the BBC would come and want to do a cookery show want to pick children to be on the show. Or there was this TV show called Toonatics that was on for like 2 seconds that, you know, there's four children every week that get to talk about cartoons and do voices and, you know, play around and dress up. And I found that really fun. And even though those were just two isolated experiences, it felt like it was bringing me towards something. Mm-hmm. So my parents saw that I enjoyed it and I had fun, and it was a good opportunity for me to like explore other things like piano and like sports, even, that are just really good for children to expand mind and physical range and things like that still help me today, actually.
Did you play netball?
Yes.
You look like you played netball.
What does that look like?
No, because I look.
You know,
I play netball. Really? That's the reason.
Recognize real. Yeah. What did you play?
I was goal defense.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, no, that's an insult.
That was an insult.
No,
because that one was actually.
Why did you play goal defense?
The confidence. There's a confidence that you need. Goal defense and centre. There's like a power.
Yeah, she did it. You got me. Yeah. Thank you.
I know. No, don't be offended. I had to make sure that everyone was equal, especially when you're playing against your, like local schools and things.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
You're like, don't like that one. Yeah. Don't like that one. You're good. And you're not going to win. I was goal shooter because I'm tall, so that doesn't really do anything. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, no. Goal shooters were still like,
still,
they take like 2 seconds. Yeah.
Only in 1/3 of like the actual court. That's why.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
True.
But you're still hurt. And that's what it matters.
I take it.
As a podcast, we are, especially me and Biss, lovers of British crime dramas.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Injected.
Right. Love British crime dramas. What was some of your favorites growing up?
Of all time.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's gonna.
And even up to now, you can go from that sort of growing up to now. To be fair.
The Bill. Because my mum made me watch it because she loved it. That was like her thing.
That was my first TV show.
That's why we brought it up.
Exactly. That was
because you did your research.
See, it was crazy. I didn't even know that.
Wow.
That's great work.
Wow.
Great work. Listen, great. The Bill was like heritage.
No, for real.
Yeah, truly.
My mum. So what was that like for you? Like stepping into something that you probably watched as a child, or you were watching growing up, and then you're not in that series.
Yeah, it was. It was strange knowing the title of The Bill, but it was the era when Amel Amin was the lead. Oh. And I thought, I'm going to recognise people, and I'm going to get to work with like young black actors and like learn some things. And I don't really know anything. It's my first time on a set. And I genuinely felt like I was at home. Like, and some of those people I still see today, and I'm like, gosh, we really did that. Like, I came out of school, was in my gap year, was in my gap year after A-levels, and then went straight into that, and it felt like I'm in the industry now. I felt like, wow, we're really doing the thing. And obviously, you're not, you know, that's just like one few days experience, and then you're like, will I ever work again? And then I went to drama school, so I actually did work for a long time. But yeah, it was fab because it's like your parents want to be like, what's the thing that's going to make me proud of you really young? And are you going to earn money from it? And I did.
Yeah. I feel like certain things that can give you that clout in your parents' house. And it's like,
If they've seen them on TV, that's clout.
Yeah. But like, seeing you on TV on a show that they watch, they're like, oh, well done, amazing. Yeah. And a show that they watch and their friends talk about.
Yeah.
And then they're calling everyone, you're like the WhatsApp DP, like you're the favourite child and everything. It's crazy.
I know. Until, like I said, you're not on it anymore. Yeah. And then it's a distant memory.
Hi, I'm Kingsley Benedict, and you're listening to Post Credit Scene Podcast.
Just before we get into the Day of the Jackal, Hussam is a huge fan of two things. He's a huge fan of Marvel. He's a huge Marvel guy.
Yes. Comic book reader.
Sorry.
And
that's the running joke. Sorry.
Not the resident Marvel guy. Like, yeah. I love Marvel as well, but you're like the resident Marvel.
Yeah. I'm a bit of a nerd.
And one thing we spoke about when we watched the film, you're a huge fan of the Woman King.
Yes. I actually worked on the Woman King early scripts. I was part of like a consultation group that helped kind of like make sure that it had like cultural references and that kind of stuff, you know?
So amazing.
Like, yeah.
What did you used to do? I
used to work in like PR and marketing and that.
Okay.
It was like four black films and, you know, et cetera. So yeah. I saw like a rough edit of it first with like all like, you know, green screen. And seeing you guys, there's the scene like towards the end, okay, where you're like walking out and there's like a big crowd and everyone's like screaming. And there's no crowd actually there, you know, it's just like massive, like, you know, green wall.
Yeah.
And your face is so it's so amazing after obviously knowing that there's nobody there, and you're like this.
Like, sounds
locked,
about right.
Locked in, like 1,000 people are cheering your name and going, yeah. But I just want to talk about the preparation for like these roles, because obviously like for that one, Viola Davis actually spoke greatly about how you were all training heavily. Do you know what I mean? Okay, and obviously you all looked outstanding. Okay, and you were fantastic for a role like this. Okay, like what is the difference physically and mentally in the preparation
with the Woman King?
Yeah.
Okay. So I went in knowing there were going to be stunts.
Uh-huh.
I went in knowing that my diet was going to completely change.
Uh-huh.
And that I'd be in the gym a lot. Prepared to do that, it's fine. I did Bond. I know what that looks like. I've got some muscle memory. But not this kind of muscle memory, I'm telling you. Gina Prince-Bythewood, our director, who is incredible and lovely and fascinating in so many ways as a filmmaker, she... just worked it into conversation. So I think you can do your own stunts. Like all of them.
God,
and obviously, you see how you went,
yeah,
I was like, pause. So with all of them, as in like, for like 4 months, how, is it safe to do that? I'm not Tom Cruise, and genuinely I'm not trying to be, because I respect the stunt industry so much that, you know, women in stunts needs to be like pushed more. Yeah, absolutely. But as soon as she said that, I thought, I'm very competitive.
Real.
So I was like, I mean, I'm doing it. Is everyone else doing it? Viola's doing it, so I have to do it.
That's a quote right there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And she worked so hard, and we were all in the gym together at times, and we had the same trainer, Gabby McLean, who was like, oh, you're tired? Okay, cool, we'll do triple of what we did yesterday. Like, there was no easy avenue to get to where you saw us get to in the film. And in order for the types of narratives and like physical embodiment of these characters that aren't real characters, they're like, you know, we're portraying historical figures essentially. Mm. In order for that to be done well, you really have to go the full way, because then it made me prepared for moments where, you would know, then you've seen the film, there's a moment where we jump on these guys' backs and like we're in the air ready to like let down our machetes.
Yeah.
That was a last minute thing for me. That was like a night before, do you want to do this stunt? Everyone else is doing it, but you weren't supposed to be in that scene, but do you want to be a part of it?
But
and I was
how satisfying is it just knocking people out? You know what I mean? Just
no, for real.
Just
I was,
being, do you know what I mean? Just being there and like women being the dominant force in that whole film.
Yeah, it's a nice release, I'm not going to
lie. How is it? Because you're on set with pretty much all women, like bar John Boyega, or like... something like that.
Yeah.
Then you go into other sets and you're like, oh, men are around. Not men are around.
But like, they're here again.
I say that with a podcast full of guys. Yeah. But like, you know? Does it ever feel different when you're on set and you're like, wow, everyone looks like me? Then you're like, oh, God, these guys are back. It's okay. It's a safe space.
It can do. No, I just.
No, I agree. It's fine. Listen.
It can be. It can be a little. I don't want to say disheartening, but a little strange, because whenever you join a cast, you get into this like there's this family vibe that happens and everyone's kind of like muddying in and you're learning things about your lives and all that stuff. And you genuinely are grown as a person from month one to month five. And then there's all the press and everything. And you're different people again because you've had rest and you've like reevaluated how you want to approach things. So it's wonderful to be able to look around and see loads of women and loads of black people, both in front and behind the camera.
Right.
Because that doesn't, we were shooting in South Africa, so that doesn't, that just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So when you then do go to other other sets and that's not there, it reminds you of what the industry really actually is. Yeah. And that was a special experience.
Yeah.
Okay.
The day of,
right.
Good question. The Day of the Jackal is a modern retelling of the famous novel 1971, I believe, and then the film came out 1973.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks, from what I saw Google.
Really interesting to me, like when a film or a book, sorry, is turned into a series or a film. But I very much enjoyed the first few episodes. Horse, how did you feel about the episode?
First of all, I know you were in it, but
I know what scene you're going to talk about.
The opening scene's crazy.
Absolutely,
it is.
Like that first 10 minutes, okay. Like and then and
the build up.
The build is so dope. And then like immediately afterwards, okay, it goes straight into the credits. To the opening
titles.
And then I'm like, you done me, because I thought I was in already, but now I'm just about to get in. Do you know what I mean? But like seeing Eddie like that
caught me off guard.
Yeah.
Really
caught me off guard. Don't get me wrong. I know Eddie's got range, but seeing him in this sort of stoic, very enigmatic mystery man role, and then the scene—you know, the scene in the hotel.
Yeah. Was that
because guy was walking in, and I was caught off guard. I was like, no way. I thought he made it in.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So there's no real question there. We're just admiring that first scene. First.
Cool. I'll let him know, man.
But the question I do want to ask, okay, is a couple of scenes later. Okay, obviously, your character Bianca, right? You have this thing that kind of happens in a lot of like workplaces, right? Where like you are the professional there, okay? You're the person that is like go to 90% of the time. Now something happens and there's like a serious situation and you're not allowed in that room, you know?
Yes.
And you almost kind of like make yourself known. You made yourself known.
Okay? Yes.
And you got yourself in that room. That
it felt intentionally written, right?
Exactly. Yeah, because that hardly ever happens, okay? Like explain that for me, please. Just that whole process, okay, of like trying to get it in that room.
So when I read the first three episodes, when they approached me, my first thought was, I have to be producer on this thing because I know that there's subliminals that are necessary to explore and portray in this space when it pertains to black women and black people and young people as well in service, because that's what Bianca does. And I knew that the art of telling that story and having it land on the audience and even you questioning what was it like getting in there, that was written on the page. But I knew that in the edit, this would speak much louder to black audiences than anyone else. And I think that she starts off as this kind of annoying character, pain in the ass, she's described as.
Yeah. Proves herself, though, man.
But she proves herself so much, and it's the fact that she has to prove herself. And in the same way, force her way into spaces that she quote-unquote doesn't belong or isn't invited to, that tells the bigger story in societally. And I think that the fact that we're doing this in the espionage world is, in 2024, is like telling of where we are in the industry and the fact that we don't recognize that anywhere, but also just how normal that is for everybody. Women can recognize it, young men can recognize it, people in their new workspace, their first day at school type of thing can recognize it, but we know what it is.
Yeah.
And I think that's those subliminals are important.
Yeah, for sure.
One of the things I read in the press notes was when it came to your costume design and your outfits, what you were wearing, there was a lot of sort of precision that went into it in terms of ensuring that your hair represented a modern day black woman in London. How did that, did you have a role in that? Sorry, should I say, and then how much show did you have in that?
All of it. I had to, but I mean, we have really incredible heads of department. We have Mel Lenihan, who was our hair and makeup designer. We have Natalie Humphreys, who's our costume designer. And I got this role when I was shooting Bob Marley. So I was already sitting with my locks, wig and head wrap and like, you know, celebrating black hair anyway in a different way. Mm-hmm. But I thought, how cool would it be if we could we could translate the conversation of hair and locks specifically into the espionage space? Just doesn't happen. We don't see it. In fact, there's a stigma against women and men, both from school to the workplace and how we explore and celebrate our hair. Mm-hmm. So I got Morris Roots, who designed and made the wig, to come on board this. He designed and made the wig for Bob Marley and then he came on board this specifically for me so that we could tell that story and do it in a really natural way, like outside of the black community. Mm-hmm. People might not even register that it's locks. They might think it's braids, or they might just think it's flowy hair. And for me, it was important to be able to not only have that as a choice, but to also speak with our director, Brian Kirk, who I don't know if you caught this from the first episode, actually, seeing Bianca's hair through tracking shots from behind. Like, she's entering work and the mm-hmm. focus is her hair. Mm. The focus is this basket weave design that Morris and another Mel, who was our hairstylist on it, did. And it kind of just, again, continues to tell those subliminal stories that you feel really, really good about and you feel represented in, but you don't feel like they're too on the nose.
Mm. Because I don't think it needs to be like, we need to get it to a point where it's just normal. And I think that's what it does. It just makes it normal.
This is it. Because then when you translate, when you then go over to costume, my conversations with Natalie were, I don't know why, but I'm just seeing Air Max 90s, 95s. And I just really want them in MI6 for some reason. And she was like, I have exactly the same idea. So we were talking about like the span of trainers and like mixing that with female tailoring and like T-shirts and like Nike bomber jackets and things that would stereotypically for a British audience and the world be seen as like quote unquote street typical or exactly. But how about we take trainers and bombers into the espionage world and just say it's functional? Like it's just comfortable.
Yeah, for sure.
And we also used to seeing women in this world in heels and smart shoes, and she does wear boots and loafers and stuff, but like I wanted the basis of her to be comfortable and a London.
And look, she's kitted out. Okay,
it's cold.
The nails, the earrings, the
like, obviously the wedding. I'm saying she like you're not here, but it's cold.
She's swagged out. That's
wicked. I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad.
One of the things that I noticed in the series, and it seemed like very intentional, and not in our face in a bad way, but very intentional to display the sort of struggle that Bianca had with balancing her career, which she's very much focused on, in tandem with her family life and the struggles of raising a family whilst being in the spy espionage world. Tosh, I don't know if you caught that yourself as well.
Yeah. Do you know like when the scene where she... I'm like super excited about this, okay? But the scene where your daughter asks you about parents' evening.
Yeah.
Okay, and then like... I found it like incredible because obviously like... You have to go to work and you've got a very aggressive job.
It's not a normal job whatsoever.
No,
not a normal job. Not. Okay, it's a very specialist, very aggressive job. Okay, which in theory, okay, you've taken a lot of time to obviously to get to. That's not just like a 2-year, 3-year uni course, and then you know here you are.
She is a service man.
Yeah. And then when you have to come home and be a wife and be a mother, you know, okay, and do those things, you can't, like, it's so unfortunate, but like women have to almost have to do those things better than everyone else, you know what I'm saying? So like seeing that, okay, and then almost kind of like the stress of like you not living up to it at times, okay, it was like,
and then getting called back to work to go again for another mission. I can't remember which country you flew to, but you flew for another mission, which was a crazy scene. With Norton. Is it Norton?
Yes, I'm not trying to confirm or deny.
I'm not saying nothing. I'm giving away too much. But yeah, you traveled away, and it's like the duality of trying to be a mum and balancing the act. How did you find that? Did you have any personal experiences from whether growing up or things that you've seen in that you put into those sort of dynamics?
Yeah, I think there's just going back to humanizing people that we recognize, like mum figures.
Right.
When we're young, or teachers, when we're young, we think, gosh, they must know everything, have everything together. And then, like, looking through the keyhole, you're like, no, this woman is so challenged right now. She's got to work late, or she's got two jobs or three jobs or three kids, and doesn't know how to do all the things and how to have that balance and act that keeps her proud of, you know, getting to where she is in her career, but also trying to be maternal. I don't believe that Bianca's maternal. I believe that she wanted more for her life, and that looked that came in the form of family. And I'm happy that we explore that. But also, I think it's really important to discuss for Black women and parents, like, what does it really look like for the child when you're going through that? What's their consequence? Like, is she going to have to do a lot of therapy when she grows up? Probably. But the kind of things that she's going to see her mother go through, but also not knowing what her line of work is hard. Yeah. And I spoke to women from MI6 and women from the Met and in everything in between. And they were like, that experience is really mad. Can be really difficult when especially your partner does not come from the same world. So there's
so many
questions and things to grapple with that just make it difficult. But also, like, just watching that on TV is just so good.
You
just don't get it.
It's still quite relatable, right? Just because it's, not all of us come from the spy espionage world.
But it's just the
reality of parents that might have to work 9 to 5 and then the other one might have to do a 10 to 5 and... Like the duality of raising a child whilst trying to sort of have your own career, which we all want to do. We all want to sort of thrive in our careers. It's quite tough. So I think that was depicted very well.
Oh, good. I'm glad. One of my friends came out of the premiere the other day and said, that parents' evening scene, triggered. I'm triggered. It was like, good, I think.
That's the great thing. Was that she wanted you to come. You know how many times I lied about parents' evening? Okay. I was like, it's Tuesday. It was 2 weeks later.
Right. You were naughty. That's the reason.
I used to dread parents' evening, man.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Did you hate parents even as well?
I was just more like monitoring the teacher to see what things they would choose to say, not choose to say.
Yeah.
I wasn't scared. I'm always just like, you don't have to. We can just write it down on paper.
<It's fine. laughs> I know you used to be the one, a week before parents' evening, you'd start behaving in class.
I'd be a gem. Be an absolute gem. And then, like, as soon as you see me, okay, if they say anything like bad, I'd be like, But it's been great.
Recently.
The past 4 days have been fantastic.
All right, my name is John Evan Washington, and you are watching and listening to Post Credit Scene Podcast.
One thing with this series, it felt as though you guys had too much precision. Like, you guys knew what you were doing. Like, there were certain scenes where you were sort of unraveling certain materials and certain sort of... Because I don't want to give away too much. Because some of these guys ain't seen it. But there's certain ways that you guys were moving, you and Eddie particularly... You felt so comfortable around those weapons and so on and so forth. How much training went into that? Because it felt
about your past life.
it felt too real. And I'll be real with you.
How much West London, baby.
Yeah.
How much natural training went to this?
I mean, muscle memory helps definitely in how to manage or even be comfortable around guns in that way. Because outside of being, of that world and being an actor, everything in between is just like, we don't do guns.
Yeah.
Here we, had the opportunity to go from our military consultant, Paul Bissett, had this like array of old, like kind of museum-esque gadgets that were things that we could possibly use in the show. This was like while we were training in the gym, like before we went to camera. There were things like, things you can take out of your pocket and throw in someone's face if they're after you, or, pens or like brooches or a high-vis jacket that he always says, like, people carry that a lot in their pockets just in case they need to pretend like they're a part of like some roadworks or something in order to get into a building. And those things informed a lot of Bianca and the Jackal and just the world build in general.
It felt immersive, man.
Good. We were immersed. We had to bring some of those guns home to practice, and it was weird.
Legally.
They're not real.
The suitcase stuff that who came up with?
Yeah. That was already written in the script. I think our writer, Ronan Bennett, had, researched and
too clever.
It's so clever. Yeah. It's so clever. And both of us, again, we had it at at home and had to assemble it and disassemble it in really strange ways. And it took so long to film because you're like, it's almost like doing a puzzle or something. Yeah.
Oh, you guys were locked in.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Same Ron Bennett from that
Top Boy.
Top Boy.
Yeah.
He knows about guns.
Yeah.
Hust, I don't know if there's something that you noticed in the episode. Before we've got finish up, we've got a quick game, but I've got one last thing with you. You and Eddie's character felt almost very similar.
Yes.
In a sense,
yes.
Of like, especially
very mirrored.
Spot on.
Yeah.
With the family dynamic struggles as well as the sort of skill and position that you guys had, what was it like working with Mr. Redmayne?
Well, we more worked together on the producerial side than being on set together. Yeah. Which is, you know, you sign up for something, you're like, oh my gosh, you're going to work with Eddie. It's going to be great. It's going to be fun. Mm-hmm. And we were in the gym like, oh, we can't wait to get on set. And then we were reading the scripts like, oh, hold on. I might not see you for like 8 months. But sure. But it felt like we were shooting like, two films.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he was taking half, I was taking half. Sometimes he'd be in on set for a week and I'd be back in London and then we'd swap. But it was, I think it fed into that cat and mouse space that we frequent in the espionage world so much, but don't really get to see the individual lives mm-hmm. of them both. So I think the more time we spend with them as individuals, the more time we see the like the mental space that they're both in and how their environment feeds into their approach to their work and their craft. Because he's like an actor and she's like a somewhat actor who enjoys lying a lot, which is a little strange, but all these things work towards those parallels coming together to form a kind of collision in the end.
Right.
Not in the end, there's different points. There's different points. There's different points and you just don't, they really do catch you off guard when they happen. But I think that creates more suspense and more want for the audience.
For sure. We'll round up with a quick game. We've got enough time.
Let's do it.
Okay. Perfect. One of our staple games is Guess the Film by the Cast.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. It's just like me. I'm so bad at this.
Because
this might be easier than you think it might be.
No, it's not true.
Might be harder. Who knows?
We'll
go through maybe five or six. Try and be quick.
Are we all playing or is it just me?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
You three up against each other.
This doesn't help.
Okay. Okay, cool.
So, the first film, or the first actor, shall I say, is Josh Brolin.
Okay.
Russell Crowe.
Les Miserables.
Denzel Washington.
All right, so it's not that.
And Idris Elba.
Oh, it just threw me.
Oh.
Sorry.
Not Takers. Not Takers.
No. Oh, okay. Then I'm done.
You thought it was Takers. You thought it was Takers.
My mind is completely blank.
I can give you...
Give me the director.
A clue. The clue is...
Josh Brolin, Idris Elba.
Denzel Washington. Denzel Washington.
Denzel as well.
What's the clue?
I'm thinking of it.
Two shots. No.
American Gangster.
She's got it.
Oh.
Phew.
She's got it.
1-0. No. Okay. Okay. Biss. Lock in. Okay.
All right, I'm not. I can't. Okay. All
right, next up, John Boyega.
Okay.
Wanda Bandar. Viola Davis.
The Woman King.
That's the
only point I'm getting. That's really bad on your
part. Allow me.
Yeah. I thought it was Woman King from John Boyega, but I was like, just in case it wasn't. Yeah. Okay. God, thanks for that.
Okay. Cool,
next up,
cool.
Idris Elba,
mm-hmm.
John Cena, Sylvester Stallone.
Suicide Squad.
She's got it.
Oh, excellent. You're great at this.
No, this never happens. This is so crazy.
That's actually so good.
No, guys, I can't believe this.
So next up, we have Billy Magnussen, Ralph Fiennes, Rami Malek.
No Time to Die.
Oppenheimer.
She's got it.
Oh, because you're in it, man. That's not fair.
I mean, I was just thinking of the cast. I know exactly. Didn't get that, so who am I?
So what's the score? 2
2-1-0.
Oh, you got zero?
I got zero.
Golly.
That's crazy.
Last couple, we have Kate Hudson, uh-huh. Dave Bautista, the one and only Catherine Hahn, Janelle Monáe, Edward Norton, and Daniel Craig.
Bond?
Glass Onion.
Glass Onion. Knives Out. Yeah.
I actually like that film. Okay.
Yeah, you really did really like that, didn't you?
That's
yeah.
a really good film.
It's a really good film. And we'll do the last one.
Yeah. Guys. Just look at me.
Give you the answer.
This is really the tiebreaker.
This is going to be the funniest one because I've done this with you so many times and you've never got it.
So, Social Network. Was it?
John Bernthal. John Favreau.
Punisher.
Matthew McConaughey. Kyle Chandler. And Leonardo DiCaprio.
Inception.
Nope.
No. John Bernthal.
John Bernthal. Big fan of him.
I like John Bernthal.
Yeah, he's a good actor.
Wolf of Wall Street?
Wolf of Wall Street.
Okay.
I was thinking straight action there.
So is that which technically...
No, it's 3-2.
You won, yeah?
You guys have won.
You won.
Well played.
Oh, well done, Bish. That's the first time you've won as well.
Ever. No. Oh, I'm historically so bad at this.
she's actually really happy.
Oh, no, I'm really, really happy.
This is a really good day.
No, oh, but how is our guest happy for you? This is crazy. This is actually crazy.
Thank you for that.
Shana, thank you so much for joining us. Hope you had a good time.
I had a great time.
We've really, really enjoyed speaking with you. Had a good time with the series. I'm really looking forward to seeing the rest of the episodes.
Yep.
Guys, any other thoughts before we round up?
Yeah.
How you feeling?
You know what? I'm feeling really good. I'm glad that I didn't watch it all before coming here.
Because I don't like binge watching shows, man.
Yeah, wait, honestly.
No, like, usually
like,
I do. But
now we can go away and just proper...
Take it in
now, okay? But now, honestly, like, it is really good so far. I didn't expect it to be this good. I'm not even going to lie. All right, but
it's actually really good.
Honestly, yeah. And so, yeah, we're super excited to see the rest. And everyone should go watch The Day of the Jackal.
On a question for you, what do you want everyone to take away from the series?
Oh, that's a great question.
I'm oscillating between people telling me what they get from the series because to feed into audiences' minds in advance can sometimes be a bit, you know, we do so many different things in this espionage world that has been, you know, presented in a certain way for a long time, and now it's not. But I also want to take away the judgment of some of these occupations.
Yeah.
And I'm laughing because obviously Bianca has an actual occupation. The Jackal is, he's an assassin. So I don't really know how to celebrate that.
he's cold though.
Yeah. But like going behind the eyes, if you like, and seeing like how they got to be there and what kind of trauma these people must be going through in order to like want to do the kind of things that the Jackal does is it's terrifying, but also like really fascinating to watch. So
getting into that mindset, it's quite interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
The Day of the Jackal is available on Sky and Now TV on Thursday, the 7th of November, and on Peacock on the 14th of November, 2024.
Damn.
So guys, make sure you check it out. We are the Post Credit Scene Podcast.
Wait, last thing.
Oh,
the soundbite.
All yours. Ask away.
Could you please go right into your mic and say, "I am Lashana Lynch, and you are and you're watching or listening to the Post Credit Scene Podcast."
Should I do it just like that?
You can do it however you like.
I'm just gonna tell you, Charles Gambino sang his. So yeah. Just in case you're wondering.
Oh, that's nice for him. Okay.
I'm so happy you did that. So thank you so much. The humbling, so that's beautiful.
I'm going to do mine in the style of Prince's new name, which is just silent and red. Okay. So maybe I'll read it, stick something up here, and then you can read it.
It's like a horse.
So joking, I'm really. If this is correct, hi, I'm Lashana Lynch, and you are listening to the Post Credit Podcast. Post Credit Scene.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Lashana Lynch, and you are listening to the Post Credit Scene Podcast.
Round of applause, guys.
Thank you so much.
That made me the hottest out of the whole.
Of all the questions, I know, right?
Oh my gosh. Oh, it's so weird, you know. That's so strange.